I've been involved in positions that deal a lot with changing roles of people in various ways, changing roles of women, changing roles in ministry, changing roles in urban churches, worked with changing congregations and changing communities for 8 years of my life. So I've been involved in change a great deal. And it's interesting, we have a neighbor who we meet often in the morning when we're out walking. And one morning he stopped me and he said, "Hey Marge, do you know how many psychiatrists it takes to change a light bulb?" And of course I thought of all those terrible Norwegian and Polack jokes that I've heard. And I get it on both sides of the family because my mother was Norwegian, my father Polish. So I said, "What, four, six?" He said, "No, just one. But the light bulb really has to want to change." So I think that's the way we find with anything in society that changes. Nothing changes unless people themselves want a change. So tonight I think I'm going to try to get you a little bit interested in things that are changing in the church, and maybe some of the things that we as the people of God need to get a little bit excited about. Just the other day in the Los Angeles Times, there was this article that just simply pinpointed some of the changes facing the church. Talked about our Archbishop Timothy Mahoney, who is a Roman Catholic Archbishop in the Los Angeles Diocese. And the headline was, "Mahoney Faces Challenge as Priestly Ranks Thin." You've probably had that in some of your local papers too. Last year, only 10 men were ordained by the Archdiocese of Los Angeles. The nation's largest archdiocese in the Roman Catholic Church, where 1,280 priests serve 2.7 million Roman Catholics. That's only one priest for every 2,151 Catholics, the lowest ratio of priests to parishioners of any archdiocese in the country. And one of the reasons that it's growing so rapidly, the whole population, at the same time the Catholic population has swelled to 3 million this past year, up 300,000 in one single year, mainly because of the influx of people from Central America into the Los Angeles area. So they're desperately trying to recruit priests for the Los Angeles Archdiocese. We can ask ourselves questions, you know, why aren't young people, in this case young men, going into the Roman Catholic priesthood? Then I got this news release, which I think has since come out in the Lutheran, from Chicago. ELCA seminaries show slight enrollment gain. Student enrollment at the 8 seminaries of the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America rose a slight 2.7% for the 1988-89 school year. However, the increase was in part-time, not full-time students. Students seeking the Master of Divinity the degree which leads to ordination, decreased by 3%. We can also ask the question, and Erling and I have been asking ourselves this ever since 2 years ago when we were in Africa, why is it that the churches in Africa are growing at 8% a year, and the churches in Europe, especially Western Europe, are declining in membership, and our churches we know in North America have also declined. In fact, someone has said that we can no longer talk about Protestant churches as mainline churches anymore. In fact, it was Newsweek magazine said they should be called sideline churches, because we're on the sideline now of the mainstream of American religious life. So we've pondered that. And also, because I've been very concerned, I was on the Faith and Order Commission in the Los Angeles area for a while and studied the Baptism, Eucharist, and Ministry document, which, how many of you are familiar with this? It's popularly just called BEM. And it was brought out by the World Council of Churches at Lima in Lima at their world gathering in 1982. And it's interesting, it's an excellent document, by the way, that gathers together really the various doctrinal streams from Protestant and Roman Catholic and Orthodox churches around the world, well put together. A Lutheran was in charge at the time of the Bishop of the Metropolitan New York Synod, William Lazarus. But it's interesting to note that baptism gets only out of a total of 27 pages, I think it is, out of a total of 27 pages, baptism gets 6 pages of comment, because there's a lot of general agreement that baptism is the entry into the Christian life. Eucharist gets 8 pages. There's a little more controversy about the Eucharist. But ministry gets 13 pages out of 27, and only one of those 13 has to do with the lay ministry. 12 has to do with ordained ministry. Yet we have been thinking that maybe if we could pinpoint anything that maybe says why Pentecostal churches are growing and fundamentalist churches are growing, it might be the role of clergy versus laity, or laity versus clergy. It seems like the churches that have more clericalism are the ones that are not growing. Certainly, those of you who've been in Africa know that the church in Africa grows in spite of the fact that they have very few clergy, educated, trained clergy. It's lay people who do the evangelizing, the catechizing, and they often have meager, very meager training. They may just have a little Bible school, or maybe somebody came out from the Bible school into the bush villages and taught a catechist and an evangelist a little bit about the Bible, but people get turned on by the gospel, they get enthusiastic, and they go out and win people for Christ by telling them their stories. So, especially in this document, I think there were some concerns I had when I noticed that a definition of terms in ministry are these. It says you have to define some terms before you can talk about the church and the ordained ministry. And one of the things that bothered me, I think, even though it says that ministry in its broadest sense denotes the service to which the whole people of God is called, whether as individuals, as a local community, or as the universal church, the next place it says the term ordained ministry in this document refers to persons who have received a charism. Now, that's a term we've never used in the Lutheran Church. We may talk about people as ordained pastor who have been perceived to have a special gift, but not that they receive something in ordination that sets them apart in a special, any kind of characteristic way, innate way, from laity. So that was a new term for me, and I was a little bothered by that, because I think it shows in this document, which is one of the first to be put out jointly with Roman Catholics, a new kind of twist to the whole term of ministry, a setting apart of people who receive something special, almost bringing in the sacramental idea, rather than that the community perceives that somebody has a natural gift for ministry or a calling and ordains that person to the ordained ministry. And then I have personal reasons. The fact that I'm vice president of my own synod and our struggle with congregations and changing communities in the Southern California West Synod, which is really the Greater Los Angeles Synod. We lost in the last year 10 congregations because they just simply dwindled out of existence. And the director of our multicultural ministries, Reverend Dr. George Villa, says that he thinks within the next decade we will lose conservatively 30 more congregations that will refuse to change their style of ministry. So to me, the way we look at the ministry of our churches is just crucial at this time. And we, I think, since I have worked in the Lutheran Church mostly, even though I was not born into the Lutheran Church, we as laity have really gotten our theology of the laity and of ministry from the Lutheran Reformation. And the energy that sparked the Lutheran Reformation was the conviction that Luther had of the priesthood of all believers, and his sense that that to have a clergy that was set apart as having a different estate, a more spiritual estate than the laity, was anathema to the church. And a lot of people today are calling for a re-examination of what they call the unfinished revolution in ecclesiology. And so you get some people who are saying that what we have to do is revive in the Lutheran Church an episcopacy, which somebody define that for me. Who?
Bishops.
Bishops what?
An order of bishops.
An order of bishops who?
That's
who received their
laying on of hands.
Their consecration through the laying on of hands of other bishops who have received theirs from other bishops who have all the way back to the apostles. Now the Roman Catholics claim they have this kind of transmission of the faith, apostolic succession. And the Anglicans, and therefore the Episcopalians in our country, and the Orthodox Church. But and only the Lutheran Church of Sweden claims that among Lutherans. But other Lutherans have said that apostolic succession is not just the laying on of hands and the transmission of the faith from one bishop generation to another bishop generation, but apostolic succession is the succession of the gospel, which is transmitted wherever the word is rightly preached and, or is preached in its purity and the sacraments rightly administered. And David Brown, a bishop of Iowa, has stated that Luther's doctrine of vocatio had more to do with the spreading fires of the Reformation than justification by faith. That was a lesser impetus to the Reformation, but it was his sense of the calling of the laity, the priesthood of all believers, that was the important. But David Brown says that fire, unfortunately, was summarily quenched. There are a lot of lay members in the churches that have given us a lot of writings on the whole business of the life of the laity. Among them are a man named Bill Deal. How many of you have read some of his books, Christianity and Real Life? And he's written In Search of Faithfulness. And Beulah Larson, a lay woman who was commissioned by her by the ALC to write, do research on the life of the laity, says that the vision is that of a church affirming and acting upon the conviction that all believers are called to be disciples of the Lord Jesus Christ at work in both church and society. And Mark Gibbs, an Episcopalian layman, lifelong advocate for the ministry of the laity, has written some things, and I'd ask you at this point, how would you define laity? If somebody says the laity, what do you think of?
All the members of the congregation or the church.
All the members of the congregation or church?
Unordained.
What?
Unordained.
Unordained. Anybody else?
Wouldn't you say those who are active, or don't you have to be active to be laity?
Laity. Well, the I think a dictionary definition is just an unprofessional person. But in the biblical sense, it comes from the Greek word laos, which means the people of God. And that includes both clergy and laity. So that the New Testament only knows the word laos for the people of God. There is no distinction between clergy and laity in that term. So to a lot of people, I think it just means that unprofessional or ignorant common people, but not according to the New Testament. In the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America, there are about 17,000 ordained clergy. And how many laity? If we look at it as...
5 million.
Yes, 5.2 maybe. Probably not that many active. Probably if you went by how many came to worship, the average worship attendance would be closer to 2.2. But nevertheless, whatever that, look at the disproportionate number of clergy to laity. And yet we put a lot of authority in the clergy in the church, and lay people in the Lutheran church tend to be quite passive. But today, according to Gallup, George Gallup Jr., he said in the 1990s, we are going to see the laity of the church, that is the non-professional people in the church, demanding more and more of a voice in the church, and we're going to have to do something about it. Now, if the church acts to squelch the voice of lay people and puts them in an increasingly passive position by giving more and more authority and power to bishops and ordained clergy, I think we're just going to see a constant diminishing in the influence of the church. I think somehow or other what the problem and the question we all have to wrestle with is very, very urgent. What is going to be the role of laity versus clergy in our churches in the future?
Judy, I don't sense this move towards the ordained ministry as being as the increasing power structure, for lack of better words. I'm an Episcopalian, mm-hmm. and certainly we hear more about the lay ministry. I would, even watching the Roman Catholic progression in the last few years, don't we see more church councils and things? They are really participating in their church activity. So I don't sense this power structure change that you're talking mm-hmm. about.
Why are you doing that? I mean, what has motivated your church to now have more emphasis on the laity?
I think it's biblically founded, as well as maybe good sense.
Yeah. Sure. Has it anything to do with the fact that the Episcopalian Church, like the Lutheran Church, is decreasing in numbers?
Mm-hmm. Sure, we are experiencing this.
It's kind of a last-ditch attempt to revive the church. I think we do a lot of things when necessity calls it forth. And then we find ways to justify it. I think we're searching for a way to revive the church, and our move toward the episcopacy and our the Lutheran trend toward the Episcopalian dialogue, mm-hmm. Catholic, Roman Catholic dialogue, is an attempt to see if maybe that's the way to go, to give more authority to the bishops.
Well, I would have to say that, just in my opinion, don't spend a whole lot of time and effort getting bishops if you think that's going to help the Lutheran Church.
Yeah, you've kind of summed up my point.
That's all
my
right
point.
Off the top of my head, but yeah. You know, we've had them for years, and why should you try and copy something that isn't,
very good question.
Isn't doing that great? Now, okay.
Well, thank you for that.
Just the one comment. What intrigues me is that in the Roman Catholic Church, where the Pope is more against women participating in the clergy, that, for example, in America, there are 8,000 Catholic churches run by women. They're everything. They do the marrying, burying, preaching, serving communion.
They have to, because there aren't enough.
But the only thing is that they have to have a male bless the elements, and they put it in the sanctuary and the tabernacle, and he stays there until they need it. I was with a man in Bemidji, Minnesota, who from Illinois, supporting his sister, who runs a parish in Illinois. She's the only one there. She does everything. But they won't give her the title priest, but she's the priest. Only thing is, the hold is that blessing the elements. She cannot do that. And Mary gave Jesus to the world, the bread of life. Women cannot serve. That really opposes.
Yeah, I think we need to insert a disclaimer here, too, about the laity, because I think you know, we're not pointing a finger at the clergy or at the bishops, although maybe they've been guilty when you put them to work. When you put the laity to work, they leave. Okay, you've got a few minutes to do this. That you have some answers to the questions we've posed and can help us with this dilemma. How are we going to have a reinvigorated laity with a vision of themselves as ministers of God? Reducing the threat of the clergy, etc., etc. What did you talk about? Anybody? Just any of the... We had a group up there too, so you chime in. Anybody? Speak up. Norman, did you have something to say?
Well, we were just talking about the training of our pastors at seminaries. How, you know, like, that they don't seem to be filled with the Holy Spirit or to bring about a spiritual renewal in the church. They got other things probably on their mind. Experience that my wife had in New Jersey was the pastor who wondered, would it be all right if he prayed when he went and called on people in the hospital? Or what do you say when you go to people in the hospital? You know, what do you do? He's coming out, he's asking my wife, he's coming out of the seminary. Well, I mean, you'd think they would be trained.
Okay. Pastors themselves need renewal. What else?
Well, our conversation centered around the fact that the church, if it's meeting the needs of the community or the people within the church, find a need within the community and meet that need, preferably in the church, that is the best way of witnessing. And the thing that I guess that spring immediately to mind is good child care, assistance for the elderly and the home. Well, I'd add the homeless.
So,
yeah. Okay, reach out to people in other needs, okay. And in that way.
Cooperating with the Catholic Christian believers as well and sharing that. Seeing that they have food and milk and whatever, and you know, sharing with those that are ministering that way, and that's showing love.
Ecumenical compassion.
And giving, distributing gospel tracts to a lot of these people that come around the Tacoma area in Seattle. They come from foreign South American countries, and they speak only Spanish, so by giving them Spanish tracts and then telling them where they can go, you know, so they can hear the gospel in Spanish on Sunday. That helps.
Okay.
Come to know Jesus that way.
Anybody else? I'd affirm the up here in March. I'd affirm the training, seminary training, to make available and to the laity in forms that is used to their lifestyles.
Okay. How would you implement that then? How many of you are going? Oh, she said she would affirm the idea that laity need training through seminaries. If the church and is constitutionally set up to mainly be concerned about the training of pastors, how many of you are going as delegates to the National Assembly and maybe could be concerned about that and get into a group that talks about the role of the seminary? The church is still in its formative stages. So,
and the thing of it is that classes and structures need to be formed so that if they are available to people with varying lifestyles too. It's not just that initial equipment has to be accessible.
Okay.
I found some difficulty there. We just had the first statement. It was some concern that our pastors are coming out of the seminary not really very well equipped. And I don't know if the layman want to go in and try and get part of that program because it's not going to get any better. Somewhere we've got to have a source of training that is going to equip us for
Okay. One of the problems that we have faced on the West Coast, especially in that Los Angeles area, is where do we get pastors who can identify with the Hispanic community? Mm-hmm. And the churches that are closing are those that where the kind of the community has changed and the congregation has not. And where do we get that leadership? How many of your congregations are reaching out to people other than traditional Lutherans or traditional Episcopalians or whatever, Methodists, Presbyterians? Yours is reaching out. What kind of community is yours changing?
We live in the city of Orange. It's close to the downtown core.
Downtown, okay.
But our church is
Did open. You have a hard time getting people to change?
No, I don't think so. The laity, that's, I mean, we do a lot of work in the community. Like.
Okay, you had a laity that was willing to change.
Mm-hmm.
And you had a pastor who was willing to change, too.
Yes, yeah. We have two pastors, and both of them are very open to working with anybody or everybody.
So you really are the people of God in mission.
We like to think so.
Yeah. Well, that's what it takes, because in the congregations I worked with, sometimes the lay people wouldn't change, and the pastor saw that this was necessary. Sometimes the lay people wanted to change, and the pastor did not, because he saw that change would threaten his secure position. So you've got to have both.
And I think what's so important is that both the pastor and the lay people must see the importance of a personal relationship with Jesus Christ.
Okay.
And if that isn't foremost, you're not going to evangelize. You have to see the worth of a soul.
How about... Okay.
You've talked about the importance of prayer, little groups getting together for prayer, Bible study and prayer, that that is the length of the church, and then some things can get straightened out that the Lord can do.
Okay.
Well, I was saying, I think it goes deeper than that, I think we've got a cultural problem that isn't answered entirely by the church as it is, and I was appreciating what you were saying, Marge, about changes in ministry. I'm not sure where the leadership comes from to do that, and I don't know that there are any easy answers, but philosophically, I really think we have a problem, because we've got I think culturally we look for two things, and the dualism, I think, goes deeper than just clergy and laity. It's what we provide spiritually that may not be an answer for where our culture is now. I think we have people flocking and then wallowing in the fundamentalist churches that are looking for easy answers. And I think, on the other hand, we have more independent people who are flocking toward the distractions that meet those needs in our culture right now a little easier than our old mainline churches. And I think as long as we're caught up in the kind of materialistic society we are today, we're going to stay there, and we're not going to go anywhere, I don't think, until we hit rock bottom. And I think that the healthiest thing we could do, if there's any way, is to get back in touch with what Christ represented originally, and the concept of poverty of spirit. And I think we've lost that in this culture.
Okay. One of the things we'll be talking about as we go on is that those passages in the scripture that talk, where Paul says, be imitators of me as I am an imitator of Christ. And this whole idea of evangelism, according to the Apostle Paul, was that we have to live lives that other people want to imitate, that they see in us the kinds of virtues and denial and willingness to follow Christ that will make other people be turned on by. So it's time to go to Vespers, I think. Thank you for participating. Mm-hmm.